Today's April 25th. We're taping for Moshe's development as prophet and leader. And we are in week 11, which is Moshe's successor. We did the May Meriva, which was Shadal. Moshe's successor in Perek Chav Zayin comes on the heels of the Benos Tzlofchad's claim. That means that we're in Bamidbar Chav Zayin, the beginning of the Perek, has five daughters of a man from Shevet Menashe making a claim. It's too hard to imagine that with so many people, this was the first family that had only girls. Right? Surely if you have a hierarchy that has the boys inheriting and the girls being cared for by their children and their husbands, right? But the girl's not married. What does she do? She's homeless? Right? So the girls make a claim. You know, God, what's written in your Torah regarding inheritance law doesn't fit our situation. So Moshe admits, and that's classical Moshe, you know, I didn't hear anything about this. Right? Stay here and I'm gonna ask further. It's the same Moshe that we read about in this past week's parsha, whose brother hits him with this disobedience, right? And Moshe says, "What's the matter with you? Your sons just died. Now you're rebelling also by not eating the meat. Look, God, listen. God is very, very meticulous with the people that get close to Him. Your sons died because they veered just slightly off of the path. Now you too, right?" Now, Aaron doesn't back off. Aaron pushes forth and says, "Moshe, you know what I just went through? Would it be good in God's eyes if I would eat meat?" Right? Now, you see, someone less sure of himself, someone who is insecure of his position, would turn to his brother and say, "Aaron, don't challenge me like this. This is the consecration of the Mishkan. I agree this is a big lich in the celebration. But don't challenge me. I just told you, not eating the meat ruins the kapara. We learned in the beginning of Vayikra already that part of the kapara for chatos is to eat the meat. What are you challenging me here? Right? Stand down." Right? So instead, Moshe listens to what Aaron has to say, and Vayishma Moshe Vayitav Aminav. Yeah, Aaron, you're right. So it's a big day in Jewish history today. Moshe is secure in the knowledge that I can step down and the people will not question what else I have to teach. I mean, when Korach rebels against Moshe, right? The revolt has many different forms, right? Discuss this. different opinions as to what Korach is latching onto in order to get more power for himself. Remember, it's just shlach just happened, so we're all spending the rest of our lives here in the desert. What kind of leadership is that? He hasn't taken us to a land flowing with milk and honey. So then he attacks Moshe's interpretations. According to the Medrash on Tzitzis, why not at Tzitzis? Because Tzitzis is the last mitzvah just mentioned. Right before Korach. The last pasuk before Vayikach Korach is about Tzitzis. Right? And Yetzias Mitzrayim. So he asks about Moshe's interpretation of the law, right? You know, if Moshe might be thinking ahead and saying, "Listen, I can't back down on Aharon. What's that going to mean in the future when people want to challenge me?" And Moshe says, "I'm secure enough to know that I'm okay if people challenge me." Right? A teacher that's insecure or a leader that's insecure is gonna bear down. I know. Don't worry. I think it was in this class, I gave the example of a teacher who, I don't know if it was in this context, but my daughter in a fifth grade class, so the teacher was teaching her first year of teaching, and my daughter said that the last shofet was Shmuel. So the teacher said, Shmuel was not a shofet, Shmuel was a navi. So my daughter said, okay, my father taught me that Shmuel is a shofet. Never mind that it says about seven times, Vayishpot it says the word shofat with Shmuel many times, right? So my daughter said, I don't know, my father taught me that Shmuel was a shofet. So the teacher, this man is a first year teacher, you have a 10-year-old kid in the class, says your father's wrong. Okay, so let me tell you how absurd that statement was. It showed that she didn't do her homework because I was writing the curriculum for that fifth grade at that school. So she didn't even look. Did you look to see my introduction to how you should be teaching Sefer? I'm writing your curriculum, Chacham. Right? But also, there was a chart on the wall with the shoftim. And the last two shoftim on the wall were Eli and Shmuel. Instead, my daughter just let it drop. She just said, okay. And she came home to talk about it. I didn't even go back to the principal to talk about it. I just said, all right, listen, let's let this drop. And then let's let this slide. So I go back and push back, and who knows, you know, teachers do that with kids. She said, okay. Shmuel's not a shofet. All right? You know, afterwards she showed her the chart, but still, your father's wrong. You know, instead of saying something, if you're more secure, you could say, you know what? I'm going to look into that. I'll see. I'll check the concordance if the word shin pei tes appears in the same pasuk as Shmuel at any point. And I'll get back to you. I'll check out some charts. Instead, just to bear down on what you said, your father's wrong, only to find out some weeks later, she called to apologize, actually. That my father, your father is writing my curriculum. Right. So, anyway. So that's, you see, if you feel secure, and you're not, it's not about your hubris or how you're presented. So you can say Vayishma Moshe Vayitav Beinav. All right. So when the Benos Slavchad come to him and they ask about this new inyan, what happens a family where the man dies and he only has daughters, and they get a positive answer. Right, they get the answer they wanted. Right? I mean, later on it shows, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. After they get the answer they want, the men of Menasha are not happy with that answer. Remember why? If they get land in Menasha, their question was a Lamdisha question. They wanted not only land, but their father, they wanted a double portion of land because their father was a Bechor. Yeah, but your father was never in Israel. Doesn't matter. The land of Israel was divided amongst those who left Egypt, and he did leave Egypt. You get it? So he deserves a double portion, and Moshe gave it to him. It's a Gemara at the end of Baba Basra. It goes through all the lumdish points that the girls were asking Moshe. Was the land of Israel muchzok, which means my father held it, in which case we do get a double portion, or was it just ra'oi, which means it's only worthy, in which case the Bechor does not get a double portion. Right? I mean, this is the halacha. A man dies and he has three boys, right? And he left $4 million. So the Bechor gets $2 million, and then the other two each get $1 million. Absent any other will or any other gift, right? But after the man dies, before they distribute the money, there's a windfall. And the money appreciates to be worth $6 million, right? Let's say $7 million. How did they divide the extra $3 million after the man dies? Equally. Because it's ra'ui, it's not muhzak. You got it? So the land of Israel was muhzak. That's the chiddush. The Benos Slavchad, it took till them to teach that the land of Israel was distributed to the people who left Egypt, not the people entering the land. Right? We get a double portion. And they got it. So Moshe sees, look at this. People are getting these these gifts. God is so flexible. I love it. Right? So, right afterwards, Moshe starts asking this. Let's go. Perek Chav Zayin Pasuk Yud Bet. Okay, I see God's flexibility. Just the complaint about the B'nai Menashe, their tribesmen, was that if these girls get so much land, and then they marry men from Asher, and they marry men from Naphtali, and they marry men from Zvulun, our land is going to be taken to a different tribe. Right? It's going to be a balagan here. So Moshe responded to them, okay, you're right too. And he said, any family where there are only girls, remember what he said? I mean, this is in the Torah, must marry men from their own tribe. You get it? You see why? So that the land doesn't revert to another tribe. You get it? Right? You hear that again? Any family where there are only girls inheriting, they must marry men from their own tribe. So then afterwards, the women of Menashe or any other such case complained further to Moshe. Why are you limiting the pool of our shadchanus? And Moshe said, you're right too. And he said, it's only for this generation. And the heter to marry outside of your shevet for such women was given on Tu B'Av. It's the earliest reference that Tu B'Av is like this, Shatchanus day. And therefore, the women were able to marry on even outside their tribe, even if they were only children. Okay. So when Moshe sees that God has all this flexibility, everyone who asks a shaila gets what they want. So what does Moshe do? V'yamar Hashem el Moshe. Right, Alei el Har Ha'avarim Hazeh. Go up to this mountain. Ure'eis Ha'aretz Hashem Nasati Livnei Yisrael. Go up and see the mountain, see the land. Now, you know that this is exactly this day. You see how what's written for the rest of the Torah is so condensed. It's amazing. Bamidbar is 40 years. Shmos is 200 years or more. Bereishis is obviously a lot more. Vayikra is just a few months, a year or two, right? But the end of from here to the end of Devarim is just a few weeks. This is where Moshe said, "V'eschanan el Hashem ba'isahi lemor." Right? Pinchas, right? So Hashem says, "Go up to the mountain, v'ri'isa usav ne'safta lamecha gamato, kasher ne'saf aron achicha." Go look at the land, right? And you're also going to be gathered unto your people the way Aaron was. Now, how did Aaron die? Can you describe it to me, please?
Did he go into the cave with his son?
That's the key thing. He went with his son. It's a beautiful way to go. He took off his Kohen Gadol vestments, they added 4 vestments, and he put them on his son. What a beautiful way to go. And he saw that everything he worked for was given on to a new generation. That's what. That's what else are we here for? What else are we living for? Right. So he saw that his legacy was passed on to the next generation. Beautiful. Do you understand now why it says you will die the way Aaron did? So what's Moshe thinking this minute? What's the light bulb? Maybe I can give over to my son too. Rashi brings this that he goes, I want to die the way Aaron died. Right? But then Hashem has to give a little shtoch, right? Kashem risem pi b'midbar tzin b'merivas ha'idah l'hakdisheni b'mayim l'eineihem heim mei merivas kodesh midbar tzin. Kasher doesn't mean when, but because of. It's a function of the fact that you rebelled against me. Right? You rebelled, you failed to mekadesh me. It would have been a much greater Kiddush Hashem had you spoken. We did all that, right? Had you taken advantage of the teachable moment, which was Mei Meriva, to teach them Maseches Tainus. And instead,
Okay. You hit the rock the same way you hit it in Shmos. You're supposed to have grown between Shmos and now. Okay. All right, so here's the question. Vayedaber Moshe el Hashem lemor. So Moshe says, listen, God mentioned Aaron, my brother, and the way he died. God, is, I saw, was extremely flexible with the Benos Slavchot, right? The Gemara asks in Maseches Bava Basra, why wasn't this just a limud? Right? Why wasn't this just taught? Vayedaber Hashem Moshe lemor, if there's no boy, girls, no boys in the family, girls inherit. Why do you have to wait till someone asks the Shaila? You have so many people. Surely if there's a family with only girls. I have a daughter with only girls, six girls. Because he wanted this moment to mezakin al-pizakai. Is that, yeah, if the B'nai Slavchot have never stepped forward, this would have been, it wouldn't have been relegated to Torah Shabbat Peh. It would have been spoken. But you know what? Let them get the credit for it. Let us always remember B'nai Slavchot. The same can possibly be said about the people who were tamei during the Pesach in the Midbar. Okay. There's always a deeper question than the one they're asking according to the oral tradition. You see, for the first 7 days of Nisan, there were seven Yemei Miluim. And on the eighth day of Nisan, Nadav and Abihu died. And they had their bodies were dragged out, right? Eighth, right? Nine. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. What was brought on the 14th of Nisan that year? Korban Pesach. So the lumdus of their question is, okay God, we already know Paraduma, 7 days of Tumah. Our question is as follows. What if we are still Tumah at the time of slaughtering the Korban Pesach, but will be Tohor at the time that you can eat the Korban Pesach, because our 7 days will be over. That's the longest. Okay? That's one opinion in the Gemara. The other opinion is that they were tummy from the bones of Yosef, not from the Adam and Abihu. It's a totally different question. Anyway, so we see that Moshe is open to taking questions and saying, I don't know. It takes a secure leader to be able to do this. Got it? Clear?
But if we're making that sort of parallel, then it seems like by name everybody also said, I don't know. I think that's why he went into the Olam Moed.
There it's not, I don't know. Adarab, but by hitting the rock, he took an initiative that he shouldn't have.
But that was after he went into the Olam Moed.
Right, when he went into the Olam Moed, I would say, according to this Mahalach, is not to ask God what should we do. That's really bad, because then you're making it look like that's what God told you to do.
Right.
They went into the Olam Moed to just escape them. Mm-hmm. The Shadal mentioned that in the first right. opinion. Od Ma'atu Skaluni, you know, it was before, but... Right. Okay. So, Vayedaber Moshe El Hashem Lemor. Something unusual there, right? Vayedaber Moshe El Hashem Lemor? Lemor usually means say this to someone else. Why is Hashem? Why is the pasuk saying? Why, just say Vayedaber Moshe El Hashem. But why Lemor here? Right? Rashi picks up on this. This Lemor seems to be extraneous here. That whenever Moshe says the pasuk with Lemor, right? Whenever Moshe says a pasuk with Lemor, it is a sign that Moshe wants an answer immediately. I need to hear now. I want to hear now what you have to say.
This is still atop the mountain?
What?
This is still atop the mountain?
Oh, yeah. So Moshe tells Hashem, Yifkod Hashem Elokei HaRuchos L'chol Basar, Ish Al Ha'eda. It's a very unusual way to refer to God. Have you ever heard of this before? Yifkod Hashem Elohei Aruchos L'chol Basar? Really? Where is God called the God of all spirits and of all flesh? Right? Anybody have the bekiyas to know there's only one other time in the Torah where God is called this? It's in Parsha Shlach. Elokei haruchos l'chol basar. What Rashi says, it indicates, is an appreciation for how different people are. A leader must be steeped in knowing l'chol basar, how different people are. Rashi writes it in his Perush. You see if you read it there? There? Elokei haruchos l'chol basar. Pasuk Ted Zion. Chob Zion, Ted Zion. Okay, God, you know that every human being is different. That when you're ruling, when you're meeting so many different people, that you can't just have one derech with all of them. Everybody's got to be treated as an individual. Not like I'm trying to make everybody happy. I'm trying to make everybody happy, make no one happy. But may I suggest that when you pick a leader, he may be saying, you know, I realize my limitations because of maybe my anivus, my simplicity, right? But choose for them a leader that is able to see the individual needs of the people. You see, because each one is different. Yeah? Of course, a good leader is able to show what they all share in common. I mean, it's all for one and one for all, maybe. But we have to have a careful lead type of leadership that does not lead to what we call the tyranny of the majority. Because even as we have to work with the majority, we also have to recognize that there are individual needs besides. It's a very interesting theory that Rashi is putting into Moshe's claim. Okay? But that's why he says, Elokei haruchos l'chol basar. Right? Asher yetze lifneihem v'asher yavo lifneihem. That will go in and come before them. V'asher yotzi'em v'asher yivi'em. That will take them out and bring them in. V'lotia adas Hashem katzon asher in lahem roeh. Don't let the community of Israel be like a sheep without a leader. Okay, now read Rashi there too, Maya. What does it mean? Asher yotzi'em yavo. So Rashi quotes a type of leader. Who is the leader that... Who fulfilled this? That was Yetzei Yavo Lifnei. Come and go before them. So listen, I'll read the Pesukim of Rashi. But I'll read more than Rashi reads this there. So listen carefully to the Pesukim. When Shaul was killed, and his son Ishbosheth ruled for a short time, 2 years, after Ishbosheth himself was killed, and he was assassinated by men of his own tribe, Bnei Yisrael finally come up to David and say the following. V'yavo kol shivtei Yisrael el David chevrona, where David had been ruling himself over the years. V'yamru le'mor, listen carefully to the words. Hinenu atzmacha u'vesocha anachem. You are just like our basar. You are like us. You know that even though you're from a different tribe, you see it. You see our needs, our individual needs. Gam etmol gam shilshon. Yesterday, even the day before, v'yod sha'um melacholim. Even when Shaul was king. Ato ha'yisa, listen carefully, ha'motzi v'ha'mevi et Yisrael. We knew that even when Shaul was the king, you were the motzi, and you were the mevi, S.R. Like motzi, maybe take out, bring in. What does that mean? To take out a people and to bring in people, what does that mean? The Rashi here in Bamidbar says it refers to that. King shouldn't just be someone
who can so readily send young boys to battle, and he stays home in the palace. But one time David did that, it didn't work out so well, remember? What do you see? When Uriah was out at battle. What? Bathsheba. So he saw Bathsheba. And her husband was in battle. If the husband was at home, there wouldn't have been any problem. Right? Her husband was in battle. When it says David knew, we know that who gave who a get. But, right, but it is in May. David used to go into battle with the people. He was the motzi and the main people. Right? He takes them out, brings them in, leads them. When the king has to go out to battle too, he won't be so quick to send boys out to the front. Okay. So Moshe's desire for a leader to fit this scheme. Rashi here makes sure if he's still David in the pasuk I just read. Okay, I'm going to continue. I'm reading now pasuk Yudchet. V'yomer Hashem Moshe, Kach l'cha et Yehoshua ben Nun, Ish asher ruach bo, v'samachto et yodcho olav. Look how quickly Hashem dashes Moshe's hopes. See? What was Moshe hoping this pasuk would be?
Take your son.
Your sons. The two of them.
Is your son really part of the nation?
So the son didn't grow up in Egypt.
He didn't grow up religious anyway.
Didn't grow up, I don't know. The son Moshe was going to take back to Egypt with him. And the newborn, the second one, that got a bris. But that wasn't going so well. So Moshe left them behind with their mother. And when Moshe finished the whole story, he meets up with them, with Israel.
Is that a form of the Torah or
after the Torah? It's Machlokas. Rashi says it's after Mount Torah, when he meets up with Israel. Otherwise, what do they have? What judgment do they have?
So that explains why his son wasn't worthy of being a leader. I mean, he didn't have the same experiences.
Right? Okay, but what can I say? Does every leader have hopes that his son will to some extent follow his path? Right? Or would you expect a leader, especially the humble one like Moshe, to recognize the humility of his sons? I have humility for myself. But any leader wants his son to follow after him. I mean, the kings know that when the king dies, it's the oldest son that's going to rule after him. Right?
I think there would be too much nepotism there. Joseph's brother for Kohen Gadol, his nephew for the Bula Mishkan.
Yeah.
All the families, with Korah, with all the kids.
Did you know that Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany was Queen Victoria's son? Did you know that?
I don't know much about that.
Yeah, in other words, if did I get that right? Not Queen Victoria, I'm sorry. Queen Victoria was queen. In England, they will allow a woman to be the head of the monarchy if she's the only child. Right? But if she has even a younger brother, the brother becomes the next king. They just changed that law now. Got it? The reason why I'm telling you is because if that was the law back in the 1850s, Kaiser Wilhelm would have been the king of England. Because he was the son of an older sister of the king of England, whose younger brother became king. So, just the 20th century would have been very different if Kaiser Wilhelm was the king of England, which was a much greater position than Kaiser of Germany at that time. I don't know for good or bad, I'm just saying. Anyway, in our story, it's an important point, is that kahuna
is definitely passed over as a legacy. But the Torah leadership, is Moshe ever called Melech? A Melech's son does rule after him, whether he's worthy or not. Right? You know what I'm saying? Right? So, Moshe is called a Melech once, but he be sure Melech b'sasei for Hashem. Right, Mistama, that's Moshe. But Hashem tells him, listen, Moshe, Yoshua's son doesn't rule after me either. What we have after Yoshua is a series of leaders who, one after the other, when they die, the next leader doesn't even present himself. They're called Shoftim. That's the real problem in Sefer Sefer Shoftim. When the leader dies, there's a dearth of leadership. The only one Shofet whose son was also a Shofet is the only Shofet that they asked to be king. That's Gideon. And that didn't work out so well. His son was Avimelech. He had to be killed by the Jews. He was so bad. Right? Okay.
I think the Nasi was father's son, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Hillel, Ram Gamliel, Shem Gamliel, Ram Gamliel, Shem Gamliel, Rebbe, Ram Gamliel. They're all sons. Because there, the Mistama, they just said that they were all worthy. Okay. So, he says, Take Yehoshua ben Nun, Ish asher ruach bo, v'samachta es yodcha olav. Okay, I want you to put your hand on him. Now, the first time we were ever introduced to Yehoshua is at the end of Parshas Bishalach, where Amalek comes. Okay. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua. He just quotes him. Doesn't tell us who he is. I mean, that's in Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Tes. Moshe tells, it doesn't say he tells his officer, he tells his chief of staff. It just says, tells Yehoshua, choose men and Zavayachlosh Yehoshua. So the first time we are ever introduced to Yehoshua, it's as a warrior. That's how we come to know him, right?
No. He wasn't a part of the war. He was with Moshe and Hor.
Yeah, but he's the one choosing and putting together the army. Right? Okay.
He was military.
Certainly in a military role. I mean, with his face is the bust of him, and used to be in the, now I think it's in the inner quarters of West Point. It says the greatest military leader of all time, Yehoshua, Joshua.
That's interesting.
They love him there. Okay. Okay. Lechalosh Yehoshua es Amalek. All right, then we see Yehoshua never left Moshe's tent, right? Yehoshua was met Moshe. Moshe met Yehoshua the first on his way down from the mountain, right? When Moshe goes up to the mountain, he says, tells everybody, Hur and Aaron are in charge. He doesn't mention Yehoshua in charge yet. Yehoshua is his apprentice, right?
Says, why was Yehoshua Zocha to take over from Moshe? It says, have you seen what was his activity? He always cleaned up and set up the Beis Medrash every day. Okay, it was the Beis Medrash in the desert. They had Sfarim. And Yehoshua was the one who kept it orderly. He made the signs for the books. And he made sure the books were put back on the shelf. People don't have to look and go for the Rambam they need. So that was Yehoshua's job. What do you think that medrash is doing? What's the agenda of that medrash? Because Yehoshua is only really known to us as a military leader. Wait, if you're taking over after Moshe, Moshe was a military leader. Moshe led them in battle. right? Not in this first war with Amalek, but he's just Moshe's the flag that they're looking at with his hands up to gain strength, right? You look at your flag and you say, yes, I'm going to fight for that, and I know what I'm fighting for. Right? So, but what this Gemara in Arabic wants to say is that Yahushua also had a role as teacher. Moshe Rabbeinu, who's Moshe Rabbeinu's successor? A military leader or a Torah leader? So, the question I pose to you, based on this Gemara, is we don't see Yahushua that way in Sefer Yahushua. I don't see him as a religious leader in Sefer Yahushua. I see him as a military leader. Right? So, isn't that interesting? Chazal have to help us here. Chazal have to answer this too. They have to answer this. So, on this, I would just do the following. This Gemara is like a Timur. It says that when Moshe passed away, everyone was grieving, and Hashem comes to Yahushua and says, Yahushua, do you have any requests of me on the death of your master? Yahushua says, No, he left me fully aware of what I need to do, he left me with my agenda, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to rock, I'm going to take over, and I'm anxious to do so. And the Gemara in Tzmura, the Tazayim in the Tzmura, says that his response had too much hubris to it that made it so that a lot of spells, a lot of doubt came in. So it's things that Moshe left behind. This is something greater than just a simple shot of the story, obviously. But the Gemara says that doubts came in and that he lost his edge in terms of a Torah leader, and he'd be limited now to being a military leader, right? But here, I mean, the first smicha was given to Yahushua. This is what we call when the rabbi gets smicha. Hashem says, put your hands on his head. Hashem says, put your hand on his head. V'samachta es yodcho. Look at the word, yodcho. Your hand. V'amadato so lifnei alozer akohen lifnei kol ha'edo v'tziviso so lenehem. I want you to unequivocally, in the eyes of the people, establish that your successor is Yahushua. I don't want any fighting after you're dying over who's your successor. Should it be Korach? Should it be this guy? Korach's dead already, of course, but maybe Korach's son. Right? Elazar is going to establish him as the leader, and you will command him and guide him in before them. V'nasata mehodcha alav l'man yishmu kol adas b'nei Yisrael, and you will give him your. It's as if though Moshe died a commoner. You get it? It's not like the king is dead. Long live the king. Moshe gave up his hold in his lifetime to Yahushua. Chazal compare it to like a candle lighting another candle. The first candle doesn't become more dim because it lit another candle. Now Hashem tells Moshe, "V'samachta es yodcha, yodcha." Look at Pasuk Chav Gimel. Read it. Mo, what do you have, Chav Gimel?
V'samachta yodcha alav.
Et what?
Et yasar yedav alav vayetzav duhu.
It's a veg.
V'yisadayu kasher yiver Hashem b'yad Moshe.
Okay, now when it says he told him, "V'samachta es yodcha alav." Now that's specific. Yodcha means your hand. What did Moshe do?
Put both hands.
Remember, didn't we say at the very beginning of the semester when Moshe grabbed the luchos? It says, Vayashlichem miyodov, but the Masorah spells the word like this. Look. Without the yod. If you're not prepared with the landing, how might you read that? Miyodov. Right? Miyadov needs a yud. Right? So, the Masorah makes a drop out of this. It's a spelling mistake, basically. Right? You can throw it from one hand to two. You have to read Miyadov, that's the Masorah. So why don't you spell it right? Miyadov, plural, needs a yud there. If it was Miyadecha, your hands, it should have been a yud between the Dal and the Chav. There's no good there. It's your hand. So there, Chazal say Moshe was trying to teach, was trying to respond to the Ego by just throwing one of the luchos. Which one? 1 through 5 or 6 through 10?
1 through
5. Through 5. And then, let me smash the one that has the graven image in it. Let me at least deliver them 6 through 10. So Hashem says, no, Moshe, you don't break one without me. There's no such thing as the no Chaveh without the Mekom and vice versa. So here, when Hashem tells Moshe, stretch forth your hand onto Yoshua's head and give him your hold. And what does Moshe do? He takes both hands in order to show Yoshua, I have no hard feelings that you're doing what I love my children. I look over all this time and I have no grievance with Hashem. If my children aren't what I was hoping that they would be, they're not you, right? If my children are not what you are, that's my fault. It's certainly not your fault. So I'm going to the Shefa, and with full grace, put not just the one hand that God told me to, but both hands. Interesting, that's close reading, right? Interesting, a similar example of close reading. When Hashem tells Moshe to take off his shoes and the snare, are you familiar with anyone else in the Tanakh who was told to take off shoes in the holy place?
The contingent that went to Har Sinai.
Which contingent is that?
Moshe Aaron and the Kohanim, they went to Har Sinai.
Okay, they were, each one went to a different level, yeah. Different side. Okay. What you're telling me is from a medrash. I'm looking from actually in the pasuk. No such pasuk. Okay, when Hashem appeared to Yahushua right outside of Yericho, he tells him the same. He says, "Take off your." But there's a slight difference between the two. It's uncanny. When Hashem tells Moshe at the sned, he says, "Take off your shoes." In plural, Shal na'alecha me'al barlecha v'ki'ad maskodesh. Get Moshe up to me'alecha maskodesh. So he says, remove your shoes from your feet. When Hashem tells Yahushua, he says, remove your shoe. Just one. I mean, if it's holy ground, what's the point of only removing one? Right? Oh, is Yahushua supposed to be standing like this all that time? What does that mean? Okay, so I don't have a great answer to this, but this is what I would just say, is that when it comes to the removing of the shoes, there could be a greater purpose for Moshe to be doing it than Yahushua. Yoram Chaim says something very beautiful. He says that Hashem was telling Moshe to remove his shoes to feel the discomfort of the rocks. Moshe was in a rocky place on my hill. Yahushua doesn't describe what kind of place he was at. Right? Moshe was at a place where it was very uncomfortable to be barefoot. And Hashem says, Moshe, I want you to feel the discomfort. He says the same thing about Moshe's hands being up like that. Moshe, I want you to feel their discomfort. No pillows, just rocks. Feel the discomfort of the people in battle, and you'll be very apprehensive about sending them into battle. But, be it as it may, in Yahushua's case, it's only a question of him recognizing that it's a holy ground, and certainly in the ancient world, today if you walk into shul without shoes on, they think it's a breach of respect. By the way, if you're in India, there's some shuls of Cochin in Delhi and Bombay. If you go into those shuls without shoes, with shoes on, they'll throw you out. Because there it's more respectable without shoes. Rambam says before you daven in the morning, you have to wash your hands and your feet when you get to shul. Feet? Taking my shoes and socks? Who does that? Yeah, because if you're walking barefoot, you gotta wash your feet.
Kohanim and Mikdash.
Of course, man, all right. And that's your Muslims. You ever see some of the mosques? They still have it. I've seen them at the airport. Some airports, they have these little faucets at the ground for their feet. Okay, so here it's the hands at this, and so you see what's the hands and the feet for Moshe and Yahushua? It's the place where, it's the extremities. So I want you to put your eminence from you, Moshe, onto Yeshua. And of course, that's the hand. So I would like to suggest to close this class, I should have talked to this before Pesach, but Zman Cheruseinu. I'm going to give you an assignment. What does the word mean? Find me etymology. I don't mean the time of our freedom. Tell me where that comes from. Where does the word Zman Cheruseinu come from? So what's the first thing you're going to look for?
Concordance.
Okay, concordance. Look up the word in the Torah and see how is the word used. Then if you don't find anything worthwhile, then you might want to look at a grammar of Byron Briggs to see, is the word Semitic in any way? Is it Aramaic? So there, instead of, look at the jastro. Look up the word cheus in the jastro. You know what that is, all the jastros, right? Everybody? Okay? So do those first two things, okay? Look up in the concordance, got it? And look up in the jastro, and you'll see something amazing coming out of this smicha. Alright? And try to think of some good English words for freedom. What are good, nice, long English words for freedom?
Liberation.